Call to order the April edition of the Student Outcomes Committee. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for the members being here. We have President Dyke on the phone. And thank you for our special guests on the board who have joined us. We want to get to the point where the entire board is here. We become the board leader. because student outcomes is what matters most, right? Thank you. So we are going to postpone the vote on the minutes until we have a full
No.
So let's go ahead and do a roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes, we have one call.
I'm done.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay. Oh, and Chair Weiner.
Thank you very much.
Can you turn your microphone on? Thank you so much.
Can you hear me now?
Great.
Let's go ahead and do a roll call, please.
All right. Mr. Weiner?
Here.
Mr. Dyke? Mr. Dyke?
Here.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep, we got you.
Dr. Barazzoni? Dr. Jarvis? Dr. Jarvis? Mr. Felton?
Here.
Ms. Kamya? Ms. Kamya? Dr. Tard?
Here.
Dr. Rudd? Mr. Shelton?
Here.
Mr. Scott?
Here.
Dr. Kreider?
Here.
Mr. Chair, at this time, you do not have a quorum of the committee.
Thank you. We need one more member, is that correct?
That's correct.
We'll amend the roll should another member come forward. I know that a couple of others are planning on being here, and I anticipate they will. So let's move ahead to the data template. We've had, for the last couple of meetings, conversations about what it is we would be collecting. And the idea here is that we would set the baseline data that align to the equity imperative and to what's being tracked for that, but would not be limited to those data. The notion is that we would want to understand student retention, completion, and progression, whether students were moving ahead from the first to the second year, et cetera, throughout. In addition, the advice of this group was that we would disaggregate the data, that the staff would disaggregate the data for full-time and part-time students, and also for the flagship students, for the four-year students, and for community college students. And so thank you, Dr. Bird and Dr. Latham. We've gone back and forth, and I know that this has taken some time because each time we see this as a committee, we've had some additional things that we've wanted to raise, but I think it's worthwhile because we have an opportunity to really dig into this and understand what it is that we're looking at. And I think once this is set, the staff will have the guidance that you need to fill this out, and also then the committee will have what it needs to consider whether we're making progress with different groups of students, what seems to be happening, and to better understand the goals of the intervention strategies so that they align with what we're trying to do in moving student success. So you have before you the document. Dr. Latham, do you want to make any comments about this or open it up for questions? Any thoughts that you'd like to share about the template itself? I think it's pretty self-explanatory, but maybe there are a couple of things to fill in. And
Thank you, Josh, and thank you for the input that you provided with the draft of the document, along with Maria Bird and Tim Hatchett as well. So as Josh mentioned, this is important work. We consider this to really be historic work for us as an institution to come up with this type of formatting to really be able to track outcomes for the university. This is our first deep dive into this work after building infrastructure for the last couple of years to provide the type of support to do the work, and even with Maria's shop and infrastructure that she now has and is continuing to build, IRAP is very important because you can't do that and develop the data without that type of infrastructure. So I appreciate the work that we've all done collectively to get that done. As you see here, we're looking at fall to spring retention, as you see on the first page. I'm not going to go through the entire document because you guys obviously have had that for a minute and can continue to give us feedback over the next week or so. It would be great as you continue to look at it tonight and, the rest of the week. Fall to spring retention. So on the number, so on the fall to spring retention for the second column, you're looking at, you know, number of completed bachelor's degree within X amount of time. We talked to the chairman about that just a little while ago before the meeting. So we're looking at fall to spring retention for the bachelor's at 6, 8, and 10-year intervals. So you can note that going forward. You can add that in, and we'll add that in to the next iteration of the document we sent out to you. And then for the associate's rate at the bottom, fall to spring, associate's completion rate and number of years for completion for the associate's degree, we're going to look at 2, 4, and 6 years. So we'll add that into the actual document so you can have that clearly, but just want to give you that context for how we're looking at that completion time for those two, both the associate's and the 4-year degree. But any questions that anybody may have, I know we across the board. Yes, sir.
My concern, again, first of all, I think it's a great job and significant moving forward. Okay, but I did have the concerns about the collection of data, and Dr. Burke clarified, but for the record, I think we should clarify how that data is collected, because at first I was saying, you know, if we don't have a system, we'll have a lot of errors, and when you try to do that, you don't know where you are. So
okay.
Just to clarify, you guys already are ahead of it. So
okay.
Yeah.
Maria Bird, Office of Planning and Institutional Effectiveness. Yes, data collection will be done, as you can see there, depending on the board meeting. So, for example, typically the first board meeting of the academic year, you'll be able to see graduation and completion information. The second board meeting of the year, I believe it's going to be enrollment information. And so this data is collected. We have Banner, as everyone knows, is our student ERP system, and so we'll be running reports through that system. We have programmers on staff that will be pulling that data for us, and then we'll be able to aggregate that and provide that within the data template. So we're coming out of our Banner ERP system.
And we're confident that can be handled.
Yeah, so the data that you all have seen in the past is very similar, maybe not to this level of detail, but we have been able to provide retention, enrollment. The way our system works, every time a student registers, applies to UDC, is accepted, our enrollment is collected in one system. The only information that's not collected within that system would be our workforce development information. And so there's another system. I believe they're using AspirePath now, but there is someone that can pull the data from there as well. So we can work with Tony Johnson in the workforce development unit to be able to pull that.
Thank you.
And that's retention, persistence, and completion from the workforce programs.
Correct.
Are those, but are
I believe those, it's just graduation or maybe enrollment for workforce potentially.
Yeah.
Yes.
Those are not reflected here, is that correct?
No.
Because that is, those are non-credit?
Those are non-credit,
workforce
yes.
programs. So
yes.
This is credit, this yes. just reflects credit-bearing yes. students.
And it's the same, we would pull our information for iPads, so it's going to be, you know, it's very scientific in nature.
Well, should they be in a 2-year, 3-year, whatever limited time period which to complete?
Yes, so the way our completion, we track our students all the way through. So when a student comes in as a first-year associate's degree student, whether they finish 2 years, 4 years, or 6 years, we would know based off of their registration and progression through the university.
Okay. Trustee Scott?
Yes, I just wanted to know whether the students know that they're being tracked when they come in. The reason I'm asking that because it might give them some encouragement and incentives to do well, to be in that.
Well, they do know because every time they go to their advisor, they know where they stand. And so they know that the advisor is able to provide them with how many credits they've earned, how many credits they've attempted, where they are in their classification, how far they have long to get to completion. So they do know that we're tracking that to give them feedback to for advisement purposes.
Okay. Yeah.
Other? Yes, please. Dr. Carter.
Mike?
So I guess my question is, the first column that shows baseline right now is empty. So
yes.
Will we actually have data in that? Yes. Is the title is baseline 3-year average from 2016 to 18. So will there be data there so
yes.
that going forward we have something to compare to?
Exactly. Correct. That the purpose here is to make sure that we're solidified on this chart, because we have prepared, or I should say, the staff has prepared data in the past, and we keep adding things. And so we wanted to make sure that we were solid on this.
Okay.
Then at our next meeting, is that the target for having this filled out?
Yes, I believe our next meeting would be in May. May?
May.
Yes,
May.
So we should be
fine.
So we're
working to fill that out. And the reason for a three-year average as a standard is that you have fluctuations that you see year to year. But when you average over 3 years, you tend to get a truer picture. Mm-hmm. So that's frequently done in higher ed.
I was just trying to
yeah, absolutely.
We're going to be comparing it to going forward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think that's what's going to be important for us.
Exactly. And I think the staff has given us a good model in our next portion of our conversation
okay.
as we look at the persistence data. We have 3 years, so we can start to see trend lines.
Okay.
So that is the goal. Is that we start to see whether we're moving towards the target. And you'll see on the far right column is the target for 2025, 2023. We can decide what the target is at that moment that we're leaning toward, working towards, so that you see the trend in relationship to where you're aiming. So that is the idea. Thank you.
So would there be comments about prior to that? I mean, I love this, and I'm not suggesting change until we look at it and we say, it doesn't look like we've made any progress, when in fact we know 3 years ago it was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's just no way to capture that. We just have to...
So some of that's qualitative.
You can go back. I think the purpose of this committee...
How do we...
My view of the purpose of this committee is to be forward-looking and to talk about where we want to go.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is not a committee that's designed for accountability purposes or to... You know, this is about we're all working towards the same purpose and trying to move forward. Certainly, if the committee is interested in having an historic look at some of the data over the last 5 years, we could ask for that. I just think we should think about what we want to do with the data. And so as we've had conversations, in my view, it's been very much about let's make sure that we've got things organized to look forward, because that's really we're about the outcomes moving forward. But certainly... history can provide us some knowledge.
Well,
about
I was actually worried more about the politics of we have to look at where we were.
Well, look,
that's true, but excuse me,
please.
Yeah, that. What comes? Over. Oh, I'm sorry. What comes to my mind is that we may be comparing apples and oranges. Mm-hmm. We just changed the things that we felt were very important, and there's specific things that we're looking for that we weren't looking for in previous years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just thinking that as is, this is our baseline, we move forward from there.
From the beginning of the committee?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, please.
A couple just some concerns. Not concerns, just commentary. One, the first one is I believe that this will go full bore in November, according to the first quarter will be in November. We're going to practice, we're going to get a data in May, a summary data in May, but full bore will start in November, correct? Will be every month we will have this data presented to us, okay? We are measuring the
every meeting,
but every quarter, it's whatever it works out to, and at the end we'll have a summary. We're going to have a initial filling out in May, and we're going to have some sort of summary report in August.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're gathering statistics on the main campus attendance. Or are we? I did not hear. I didn't. Are we doing the same thing for workforce development? We have been carrying the, and I'm not trying to impose more on you. I'm hoping that this rubric, this platform, will somehow be able to track what we're delivering to workforce development as they progress from entry to exit options. What we've been doing is, as we study our 4-year and graduate students, we need to apply some of those same fundamentals to our workforce development, and this rubric here seems to be the beginning of a way to manage all that. I know it's doubling down, but we're responsible from workforce development to doctoral programs, and so we're managing all of those, and we need to know the data because we're hoping that the workforce development will feed our two- and four-year mm-hmm. programs. And so that's why I'm saying the earlier we start. Those are my points.
Mayor, mm-hmm. just to address that point, the community college has started looking at that.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, in our meeting, the Academic and Student Services meeting, there will be a report
okay.
that will share some of that data.
And when will that be? When will that be traditionally? Is that just each meeting, or do you have a Is there a template that you're using?
No, there isn't. It's just that it is something that we realize that we need to be looking at because mm-hmm. the people downtown are looking at workforce and,
yep.
and what's happening, and we need to.
Mm-hmm. So it may be a conversation worth having. Here we have workforce credentials. In the enrollment profile and trends, you've got mm-hmm. workforce, correct? Mm-hmm. But Tony, are you saying that there are graduation data that you're going to be looking at workforce data?
No.
It's enrollment and credentials?
It is enrollment. It is pathway. How many move from workforce into the associate degree program.
Mm-hmm.
And then there will also be some sort of relationship to employment.
Yeah. So maybe...
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
But it's again, we're trying to prepare our workforce.
Yep.
And then we want to get credit for the workforce that we are preparing, but we have to be able to document that. Just as we're documenting our academic excellence, we must also document our workforce excellence.
Right. Absolutely.
And that's why I said this rubric is a great beginning, and I'm not trying to penalize. I don't want to stop this action. But I want us to understand that if we're going to study and create a movement into the flagship, we have to take all of the resources. And every student that enters any of our programs is a resource for the flagship that we have to husband all the way through to the end of their dream.
Mm-hmm. So just to piggyback on that, Trustee, I talked to Tony Johnson today specifically about that very thing. And so he's a part of this conversation. We're adding him to this overall group
okay.
in terms of Hatchett, myself, Maria Bird,
mm-hmm.
Tony Johnson's on board. I sent him this template, as a matter of fact, today
okay.
for him to be aware of the conversation and be a part of the team. So he's going to join us going forward.
Okay.
So just know that as well. So Tony Johnson is on board.
Yeah. And okay. Might I suggest that, I mean, I don't know if August, because we have sort of projections for the coming year, but it is a place where we're not getting new data.
Mm-hmm.
It would be helpful maybe to have a report from the community college on workforce and on transitions from the community college in August. I don't know, Tony, if you think to this committee so that we can be fully aware of the data that you're gathering there.
We can do that.
If you could, and you could make that presentation or you could invite whomever to do that.
Tony Johnson.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah. But maybe in August we can get that report here so that we are considering, as you're suggesting, Trustee Sheldon.
Because if you're going to do it for the flagship, we've got to do it for the whole system. And the whole system is what we're trying to carry forward.
Right. And I think your point about transitions is one that's not carried here. Mm-hmm. So transitions and then any additional workforce information that's not captured here would be helpful to have in that August meeting. Is that something that
yeah.
people are comfortable with?
Do they have time to do it?
Well, it sounds like they're presenting it anyway.
We're presenting...
It sounds like they're gathering it anyway.
Yeah.
And I just think it would be helpful for us to get that full picture.
When is my meeting, sir?
I'm sure it's
crossed by. It's like next week.
18.
It's 18. 18.
18.
It's the 18th.
And our first full year of this effort will begin in November of 2019.
Well, we're going to get
the full. We're going to get a some. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. Once we have these data, they can be used in any other meeting.
Yes.
So I think we will have in November, because of the timing of when data is collected,
mm-hmm.
November is the right time to report on these big picture issues of graduation retention and progression.
Yes,
exactly.
We can get fall to spring retention now, which we'll talk about, because that's just who came back in the spring, right? April, by April, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
You can pull that from the system. And then we can get enrollment in February because we'll know who's here. Fall to spring retention. We thought the fourth quarter would be helpful for some trend analysis for all of the data, and then in November is when we'll be getting the big report. But that report, I'm anticipating, will be considered each meeting. It's not as though we're just thinking about it there.
Right.
Those data, and this isn't all that we're going to be doing in these quarters. We're going to be talking about interventions, and we'll want to keep referring back to the reports that we've gotten.
Correct.
But this is a pattern of reporting where we'll receive the new data at these moments that are patterned after when it's best for staff.
Right.
To both make sure it's collected, make sure it's solid, and then pull the data for the report.
Yeah.
So
Matt just asked, the first time I'm seeing it, but will you be able to look also, and I think you may have said it and I may have missed it, but to track students that are transferring over from workforce development into
the associate, right.
Associate to the accredited programs, and is that captured in here somewhere? Or will that be captured in here somewhere?
It's not here. That was one of the reports I think that Tony said was going to come from the community college that we could be considering in that August time frame.
Yeah.
So it will be. So I'm thinking that this report here is essentially going to show what's happening with our students no matter where they're coming from.
Correct.
So
it was a good question.
So that would include workforce development, because if in fact part of our mission is we want those workforce development students to continue a path of education that could eventually lead to even a doctorate degree, and so if we're not tracking where the workforce students are who transfer in now to the 2-year or the 4-year program degree programs, how do we tell who did that if it's not captured in this information here?
So the standardization of data, I think, is going to be key. I will say that I've been working with Tony Johnson. He's been working very closely with IT to be able to get workforce data into the Banner ERP system, where it does not currently reside. Having an ERP system helps us to have reliable data for the 2-year and 4-year programs, graduate doctoral programs. Our workforce data sits in a system called AspirePath, which is a little different than traditional ERP systems. So I would say we could commit to enrollment, the number of certifications, and most likely the transitional students, so those students who finished out, let's say, in the spring of 2018, who are now students in the fall of 2018 or spring of 2019, and that's probably the 3 data fields we could commit to for now, and then I guess as time goes on and as we begin to really bring on the workforce development data into our traditional ERP system, we could potentially provide more, if that would be sufficient.
I'm just curious because if I recall, one of the real issues that we had or concerns that we had over the years was whether or not we viewed this as a single university in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do that, we needed to be able to identify where those workforce students fit.
Mm-hmm.
And because at one point there was a struggle, I'll say it that way, there was a struggle around, you know, that's a separate group, and, you know, we are not, you know, looking at keeping our students or, you know, bringing our students over here. We're sending them someplace else, but they're our students, and we want to be able to track our students no matter where they are. That's why I'm raising the question and the concern.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. And some students will be in terminal workforce programs and won't go on in higher ed, and that's fine. And some will go on, and knowing how many come here versus maybe go somewhere else, that's helpful as well.
And
so I think it strikes me that there's a whole set of questions around transitions that probably is worthy of a separate conversation. In other words, how are we capturing it? And you know, in my view, we want to meet students where they are and make sure they're getting the credentials that they need and setting them up for success in life.
Right.
And that through line you talk about, Dr. Kreider, is one of the ways to do that. But there are other off-ramps and on-ramps into the institution and out of the institution. And mm-hmm. But having that information will help us understand the extent to which that notion of seamlessness within the institution is happening.
You know, politically, another option is to be credible about where we are with that data up front, so that somebody doesn't ask us, well, what about the workforce people? Well, you know, we're working on it. That's a whole different statement from...
Well, we have, every other page of this has workforce credentials awarded. Mm-hmm. So it is incorporated here.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to say that so people don't...
Yeah. We'll be able to gather that. Well, the reason that it's not here on credits is because they don't earn credits.
Right. That's right.
So the structure we have on page one just doesn't really work for the workforce students. It works on the enrollment report. It works on the credentials awarded report. I think Dr. Kreider's raising another possibility, which is to be having, at some point, a transition report which tells us who goes from workforce into credit, who goes from the 2-year to the 4-year. Mm-hmm. Those are interesting and important questions. Who goes from our undergraduate to our graduate programs? Right?
I think it's more than just interesting questions. I think that they are critical questions to also help us understand how successful we are, and in some ways it also, to me, speaks to our ability to retain those students and move them through the university. Mm-hmm. I understand that not everybody that comes through workforce is going to be looking for another credential. I got that. You know, most of the time I'm pretty smart, so I got it. Mm-hmm. So I am going back and concerned that we are able to really capture how we are managing those students who are not interested in leaving out of the university once they mm-hmm. get the 2-year or whatever, but are interested in going on to some other credential. Mm-hmm. And this report,
yes.
I got it, it's not showing that. Mm-hmm. It's not the intent of this report to show that. I'm just asking, is there a way that we incorporate that in some way so that it does account for that? And we can say with honesty that we are focused on mm-hmm. all of our students, the pathways that they choose, mm-hmm. and our ability to get them there.
Mm-hmm. No.
That's a story that we need to be able to tell,
sure.
I think.
Yeah. Yep. And so I can jump in real quick. And please. I think for Dr. Kreider, I think you're right, obviously, in terms of the focus of the institution and looking at workforce as a part of the overall family.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then we have to understand how we dissect the family to understand who gets an opportunity to understand why we want you to move forward. Is that the right fit for you?
Right.
Right. Then if that's the right fit, what's the pathway to get that done?
Right.
And so the pathways work that Tony Summers is doing right now around the associates to the bachelors is going to help us inform where we have gaps, where we have success and strengths in that area, and then we're going to learn from that, and we're going to go backwards, I think, and look at the workforce process as well. And that's the conversation we've had around that construct.
So,
also.
I'm not asking you to be exact, you know, but can you give me some idea of when you think we'll be able to begin to see some of that information or some of that work that says this is how we're getting to what you just said?
But it's a timeline of looking at what we do right now, which Tony Johnson is on board with understanding the metrics of what we're looking at here, from both the pathways process for the associates to the 4-year. So he's already started looking at that data to see what is doable for him and his team to help us have those conversations, to have a transitional process and plan laid out to bring them back to the 2-year program. So it just hasn't been processed yet, but those conversations have started. So if you give us 6 months to a year to look at what that looks like, I think that's going to be where the data comes out, and we can have a robust conversation around what that looks like overall as a pathway process.
And
just to answer,
Dr. Bird, and then
Dr. Bird,
I'm just going to say, to support the piece, is Tony Johnson has been working to ensure that they are able to apply to UDC. I mean, he's been pushing that. Mm-hmm. So even from just the work in the initiatives, it's not that they're not working on trying to get as many workforce students here as possible. It's just kind of the data around it and really understanding the strategies might not be 100% in place, but actually the work to make sure that that's happening. And I know he's even been in touch with admissions, and Dwight may be speak more to that as to how they're reaching out to the workforce students. But that's actually happening, and they are aware that they need to be pushing workforce students who are interested coming to the university.
That's kind of what I'm waiting to hear, because I know at one point that wasn't happening. There was not a push to that our workforce students come here, right?
Yep.
And there seem to be barriers to getting those students from workforce programs who wanted to continue their education as students here at the university. So that's what I wanted to hear.
And even in the last year, they've been given ID cards, email addresses. So there have been a lot of efforts to say, hey, we understand what you're saying, and we need to be more inclusive, to Dr. Latham's point about the family. And that's why the conversation about bringing them into the Banner ERP system is so critical, so that they can start being able to be tracked as every other student and then being given options as to what else they could do beyond the certificate.
Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
Trustee Shelton, you had a... Thank you.
I do have...
You had a question?
One additional. I think that if we're talking... This is a committee for student outcomes committee. Mr. Johnson needs to participate here. Talking about the person that's not here is the wrong way to consider this discussion. And to focus on total inclusion means this is an opportunity for him to help us understand and to support our commitment to student excellence that we're striving for.
Absolutely. So, as I mentioned before, Trustee, I advise him out tonight. He couldn't make it tonight, but he's committed to being at every other meeting this year and be a part of the committee going forward.
Every other? Or all the other?
All the remaining, the remaining meetings.
You know what he meant. Yes.
Oh, reversing words. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. A great conversation. Any further comments or questions about the template?
Nice. It looks good.
Very good. Thank you. And again, thanks. Thanks for
good job. Good job.
Let's move on then, if we could, to the retention or persistence data. Yeah. Put another way, you all have in front of you a single sheet here with data from the cohorts from fall of 16 to 17 to 18. Now, to be clear, when we ultimately have these data, we'll have fall to fall retention, which is typically what you see with retention. This is just fall to spring. Who comes back the second semester after the first semester? Turn it to you, Dr. Blake.
Thank you. Thank you, Josh. So, as he mentioned before, this falls in line with the particular reporting templates you guys we just talked about in terms of that for April, as you saw there, fall to spring persistence, was fall to spring for 16, 17, 18 you see before you there for both the flagship and this community college as well as the total population. And you can see the trend line from that from 16 from for both full-time and part-time. And it's been, part-time is remaining flat, and then full-time is trended down a couple percentage points there. So what we're doing now is that we have a subcommittee meeting outside of cabinet with Ms. Byrd and myself and Dr. Potter and the president are focused on the attrition specifically from fall to spring. And that's our focus every other week, is to pull that data, look at those students who don't come back. And we have a list of questions we started on this past month to dissect that data and to pull out exactly why, what's happening with them from a grade point average perspective, what's happening with them from even a financial award perspective and financial aid, and look at those type of trend analysis to see what is going on. We're also going to do a survey of those students as well. We do calls to them as well as emails and texts to pull information out to see what analysis we can pull from them both qualitatively and qualitatively to get at this number. So that's the focal point of that subcommittee is happening right now every other week between those four people, myself, the president, Dr. Potter, and Ms. Byrd. So we feel good if we're going to get some deeper understanding of this process and then how our interventions align with that. And we're not going to do anything until we really get a good sense of what the data is saying around that process going forward. But that's our focal point for right now, how we're looking at fall to spring persistence.
So I just, again, have a couple of clarity questions for myself.
Okay.
So when I look at the community college numbers across, how does that account for those students who were in for a semester or some program that they were in that only ran 6 weeks or something like that? So are they shown somewhere in these numbers? So how do you account that this was not somebody that was here for a full semester, but was here for a specific purpose? They either completed what they were here for, and so when this number is lower, I'm not assuming it's lower because people dropped out. It could be that the number is lower because they completed the program. And so is there a way that we're able to determine that? And
please.
Also, yeah. Are these, the second part of my question goes to, when we look at total numbers and we have percentages returning in spring and all, are those numbers based on actual people and not just numbers? So is it 1,263, the same 1,263 people that were here in August of last year, or does that 1,200 or, you know, that 1,169 include people that may have gone somewhere else? So your number is changed.
So does this count spring starters is the second question. Or is this that specific cohort?
Right.
This is the
Maria Burt, Office of Planning Institutional Effectiveness. So the list of students that you're seeing, so if you look at the fall numbers, those were students that were here, they were enrolled, they were registered, whether they were in the community college or they were in the four-year, and they were full-time, part-time, whatever their classification was, that were enrolled for a program, not just like a workforce class certificate. They were actually students seeking either associate's, bachelor's degree. Seeking students. Now, to your point, we are beginning to tease out because we do know that we have, what do you call it, a swirl. Dr. Latham? We do know we have a swirl, but we're trying to find ways so the students don't swirl out of here and they say, oh, I'm just coming here because I know they have a great bio, you know, some type of engineering professor. We want to take him, so we're going to get those 3 credits and go somewhere else. We want them to come here, either stay, you know, but we don't want to have, like, that swirl. We want to actually get students in to complete. So that would be, an area of concern. What can we do to keep you rather than you just coming to take one class and then going back to your institution or going somewhere else?
So all of the students, and just to clarify, the students in the, it's a great question, the students in the community college programs are in programs that are more than a semester long.
More than, yeah, they're not just here to get it to for a semester, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And all of the students, just again, these are important questions, all of the students in returning, those are a subset of the students who entered.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Or that were here, that were enrolled in that fall.
So there are additional students not reflected here that are spring starters, for instance,
okay.
Or swirled back in, right? Mm-hmm.
So these were students that were here in the fall of 18, whether they were freshmen, sophomore, juniors, seniors, that came back in the spring of 19. And the ones the difference, which is normally around 800 or 900 students, are the ones that did not return.
Okay. But then somewhere there's another number of students who may have come in the spring who were not here in the fall.
Correct.
And they're not in these numbers.
Correct.
Correct.
Okay.
So you would not count those students who are a part of a consortium or part of the consortium?
Of the number that we're looking at?
Uh-huh.
No, we're just looking to see because we're trying to, that are coming in, that we want to try to tackle those students too. Because if you come in the fall, likelihood you should be coming back in the spring. You don't have the long summer. So what is it that's causing us to have 800 students or more not returning in a subsequent semester?
Yeah. And this is the lion's share of students. And so I think mm-hmm. the idea is let's create these. I think there are really important questions about transfer students, about students who are coming just temporarily for a course or two. How are we serving them?
Mm-hmm.
Are we capturing any of them for full-time enrollment subsequently? Mm-hmm. That are enrollment-related numbers, but maybe not as directly related to student outcomes as where we want to start. So I think we see this as the right starting place.
Right.
Other questions about this report? Yes, please.
Based on our funding for the law school, is there a reason why we're not seeing law school data in this matrix?
Yeah, this is really meant to be, as I understand it, is an undergraduate student outcomes committee. That's the charge that I was given, not at the graduate level, but if people want to try to add that in, I think we've got our hands full with undergraduates.
Yes.
And typically at universities, you will see a focus on undergraduate retention. We have graduate programs as well. And
well, I wouldn't think of that. I think at some point later we could add that on. I don't think we should jeopardize anything that would restrict us from creating and releasing this report when we need to. And I don't think that was your intent. But
Yeah, we went through many months and back and forth and back and forth.
So I would ask that, you know, the committee give us opportunity to get this data in this format clean and productive first, and that way we could then
Appropriate response. The reason for my question is to make sure that we don't lose sight of that data,
Is
just as critical as the workforce development data. Mm-hmm. That's all my point was, is that I would like to see this done, and then hopefully we will expand it to include everybody. But this has to be done. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to jeopardize that, but I have to ask these questions now because it needs to be in our discussion throughout the process. But no, getting this completed is worth the wait.
Can we include that maybe in the student affairs? Would that be something? I mean, academic affairs to talk about the law school retention and graduation? I don't know.
I'm not trying to make you do this in the next 6 weeks. I'm trying to put this in the processor as we begin to work this out, to begin to supportive data for what we invest in the law school. We have not fully, if we're talking about student success, and we know that we have issues of our successful students in the law school, we need to pay attention to that arena also because of our investment in the law school. But as you build this process, mm-hmm. I understand picking the priorities. But as a trustee, I must insist that we have data to support all of our students' success, not just selected groups. Yeah. But when you're building a house, you got to make bricks first. And you got to make sure the bricks don't break. Mm-hmm. And that's what you all are doing, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that at some point we do need, because when we talk about the university, we're talking about the university in its totality, you know, and that includes the undergraduate, the graduate, the law school, the workforce, and what have I left out?
Associates.
Didn't I say that?
Yeah.
Just in case.
Say it twice.
We want all of that.
So I would suggest that
when we talk about the university and how, because they ask us, they don't ask us about specific programs or levels. They ask, how is the university doing?
Mm-hmm. Right. So let me propose that we have a conversation, that I have a conversation with Dr. Latham and the staff about both transition reports and about graduate school. And that we have a conversation about what the timeline might be for the addition of those, and that we try to get through this year with these reports that are being promised now, but that by the end of the year that we report back to the committee, but before the end of the calendar year,
mm-hmm.
not the academic year, that we report back to the committee on a plan for when those, what might be done and by when. Would that be satisfying to the committee?
That's my point. And we say that up front, not I got you in a question and answer period, that we say this is our plan.
Yeah, no, we'll have a conversation about it.
Yeah, we'll have a conversation.
And that will enable us the time to focus on this.
Right.
I think that it's important that we show that we have not forgotten these
exactly.
other components.
Yeah.
That,
fair point.
You know, the law school certainly, mm-hmm. to Trustee Shelton's comment, you know, we spent a lot of time in these meetings talking about the financial support that we provided to the law school.
Yes,
and there were some heated discussions, some disagreements about that, and, you know, some compromises about that. I think it's fair that we understand how that money mm-hmm. is being spent and the value of that. You know, we made some changes to how we allocated some of those funds. To be true to that, to the law school now, you know, did we hurt the law school, for example, because we decided we were going to reduce our allocations to them? And so I'm taking some leaps to say there's some relationship between this and this, but I can't tell that if I don't have the numbers and stuff that support it. So I think a discussion, only thing I'm saying is that I don't think it serves us well to say, yeah, we're going to look at it. But to put a timeline in there, which is what you did a few minutes ago,
mm-hmm.
to say by, you know, the fall, we'll be able to tell you this, or by the end of the year, we'll have a plan in place for that, then I can hold you accountable mm-hmm. that when I sit here this time next year, I can, well, hopefully I'll still be around next year to say, you know, when I asked you this last year, you told me I haven't seen that.
Okay.
And so now we're able to hold you accountable to something, and I think that's our responsibility.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else on the retention report, assistance retention report? Very good. I know that we have a guest speaker who wanted to address us today. Thank you, Arlene, for joining us here, and I will let you get. I'll ask you offline what happened to your foot, but I'll give you the time to get to the microphone. And then if there's any outstanding business subsequent to Dr. Kingberry's comments, we can take that up before adjournment. Okay? Thank you. Please, Dr. Kingberry, if you would push the mic on, please.
Arlene Kingberry, Chair of the Faculty Senate and Voice of Faculty. I'm so delighted to be here. We have reviewed all of the data that was presented today, and thanks to Maria Bird for her work and Dr. Latham. We have a couple of concerns, and I'm going to not read everything on this list because you can read it yourself. The accomplishments of faculty are there, so you can read those on your own. But I just wanted to say one thing at the beginning, is that we are certainly encouraged by the outcomes and the data that's provided, but I guess we want to go a step further and find out if there is a problem with retention in addition to the program that is proposed. What else are we doing to support students to ensure that they remain here? And the other thing is that when we collect data on outcomes, we would really like to see outcomes for licensure. When our students graduate, they take exams for nursing, for mortuary science, for you know, whatever they have to take, all of those tests. Do we have that as an outcome? Because I'm sure that that would really make us look well, because our students do very well on exams, and that's one other piece of data that we need to have. But let me go into the concerns about the template. When on the goal one, performance measure one, it says number of new proposals developed and presented to the Faculty Senate for recommendation. We have never been approached for a baseline. And I see here that for 2018, it says zero proposals. And FY19 is one. And so I don't know how that was derived without consultation with the Faculty Senate. And so I would like to have an explanation for that. Are you with me? On goal one?
Okay.
Page two of your report?
No, this is the template
yes.
that was passed out that Dr. Latham has, that was sent to me yesterday. Is this the wrong template?
I think you have the equity imperative template, I believe.
Yeah, is that what was sent?
Yeah.
No, it should have been. We have a different template for the outcomes.
You have a new template, so this is out.
It's for this committee. It's not the template for this committee. That's the template for, I believe, for equity imperative. That's what she's leaving at. Yeah.
So which committee handles that?
Yeah, that would be the academic. The issue, so the equity imperative, I think, has a number of issues that report back to different, that relate to different committees.
Right.
And so this was the conversation I was referring to earlier, which is that as it existed, the equity imperative didn't provide the outcomes data in the kind of detail that we thought, this committee thought, would be valuable for us to consider. And so a different template has been created for that purpose. The one issue that you just mentioned strikes me as an academic affairs issue, because it's about new programs, academic
right.
programs, regardless of whether students are in them or succeeding in them. Understand that you care about both. but that I think that would be an academic affairs issue. I'm happy to give you my version of this.
Yeah, because I don't have what you have. So it's kind of difficult when we get things at 12 o'clock the day of the hearing to, you know,
read it and be prepared to give testimony. So I thought I'd bring that to your attention as well. So maybe these things that I'm listing are not relevant, but I think so often we operate in silos that, you know, students don't understand it's not this committee, it's that committee. Somehow we need to, as you were doing with workforce, kind of bring these things together. It shouldn't always be separate. Student success is based upon faculty. It's based upon new programs. All of those things are related. So, you know, I don't know. You have your organization for how you handle things, but we just can't continue to operate in silos. All right, so let me go on then to some of the issues, and I was just going to highlight those things here that we thought were, you know, inappropriate, or I don't know where they got the data from, but we wanted to highlight those. So let me move on to the other concerns we had. At the Faculty Senate meeting, we talked about training for faculty on DegreeWorks, EAB, and the new banner portal. After the spring break, faculty came back and students came back, and we were unable to get in the banner. EAB, some of us know, some of us don't. So we hope that, and I've talked to Dr. Latham about this, that we will have training, mandatory training for faculty, so that we will all understand the systems that we use. We have three different systems. It's a little bit wacky. You have Banner, you have DegreeWorks, and you have EAB. And they're pretty much doing the same thing but different ways. So if there's any way we can streamline this or make a process so the faculty can, you know, and students can utilize them to ensure success, it would be most helpful. There was another concern from the Speech and Language Department about the applications for admission, that there were, there's supposed to be a consolidated approach to admissions, and for some reason we're later than other schools and they lose a lot of students, and the we need to have electronic applications. I don't know if that's happening this year. They thought that it was, but that's another concern raised. There was also a concern raised about housing for students during the summer. There are students who are from out of state that want to know where they can stay during the summer. So I don't know what the issue is with housing for them. If, you know, I understand the issue with the apartments, but don't we have a way to make sure that they have a place to stay? The other issue is disability accommodations. We had a student at the Faculty Senate meeting who stood up and said that he was in a biology class. His biology professor refused to give him accommodations, and he wrote disability services, he wrote whoever, whoever. And this is a really good, he's a pre-med student. He's a student that just had a kidney transplant. And he is sick quite a bit. And so I talked to Dr. Latham about it. And so my broad thing is, what are we doing to ensure that students with accommodations receive them? And if they don't receive them, you know, listen, I'm a faculty member, but if there's a faculty member that's not doing their job, we need to take care of it, okay? So what are we doing to train faculty to sanction them if they're not doing it? We cannot allow students to just walk around and not getting accommodations. So that was a concern. And then the other concern was the IRB approval before conducting surveys on faculty and students. And I don't know how successful the data analysis team has been on obtaining IRB approval, but I know that was presented to me as a problem. So whatever it is that can be done to ensure that happens, because we don't want any sanctions for not following the Institutional Review Board process. We also had suggestions on student advisement to make sure that we have professional advisors and their assigned colleges and programs to work with the student success advisors. That has been a problem for a number of years. When students realize that I can go to this advisor and get something done and not have to go to the other one, it presents problems. And what happens? When it's time to graduate, they finally have all these courses that they should have taken that they avoided for whatever reason. But we need to have a joint agreement with faculty advisors, student success advisors, to make sure that our students are successful. We also need to send a list of new admits from the professional advisors to the program. So whenever there are special education students coming in new, I don't care if they're freshmen, I need to know who they are so that I can reach out to them and that I can communicate with them along the way. Certainly if we institute this new advisement system, that will be available. And so that there will be, and to make sure that everybody is aware of the changes in the programs. If the programs are changed because of new programs or whatever, it should be electronically on the website so there's no question as to what course of study should be followed or should have been followed or what changes may have occurred in the program. And then with student retention, to make sure that students are enrolled in the correct major to support their current career goals. Many students come in, I'm going to be a biology major, then sophomore year they want to be a math major, and they're taking courses for biology, they never change the math. So we need to make sure that students are aware and that advisors are in agreement with what they need to have. When it comes to scholarship support, we had an incident this year of several students who were awarded UDC scholarships, and they were purged. I had one in my class. And he was purged for about 5 or 6 weeks. He couldn't get into Blackboard. What are we doing about that? That's unconscionable. The student didn't owe any money. It's a glitch in the system. We need to make sure that this system is taken care of. Then we're working pretty hard at identifying students who are academically at risk each semester. And we need those strategies other than the current strategies we have. Some of them need one-on-one instruction, not by a student, by someone who can really relate to all the issues they have. Our students have major issues. I have students that have 3 or 4 babies, you know, they have jobs, they have 2 or 3 jobs, and they don't have time to come and meet with a tutor every day or whatever. We have to really make accommodations for them. And to publicize confidential support services or other resources for faculty and students who have mental issues so that they can have early interventions. We really do need that. And to continue to promote student life activities as a way to increase student energy and engagement. We have to have students. I know the other day we had something on the Greek life event. I asked my students, do you know anything about it? They said no. Our students, for some reason, I don't know, they don't read the email or whatever. We need to do a little bit better with publicizing student activities. I have to tell them every time I go to class, what are we doing to ensure that they get the message? So I hope that some of these areas that we have brought up, you will investigate and to make sure that whatever strategies we use to improve student success and retention, that we not use one or two methods, that we have several options. And we, faculty, are here to support you. I understand that you have a committee, Dr. Latham, that's working on the data you mentioned earlier, and it seemed to be all administrators. We are here. We are here. We're ready to help you. If you really want to know about student outcomes, we have them every semester. We write them every semester for our students. We have the results. We talk about the strategies we use. Those outcomes should certainly be in this as well, because that certainly impacts student success. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a couple of comments, if I could. One is thank you. I really appreciate the focus on students in your comments and the specificity of the issues that you raised. That's really helpful. Second, I just encourage you to reach out to the chief academic officer.
Sure.
And to share, because some of these fall within the purview of academics, but a number of them do fall in the strategies. So, you know, this committee is not just about collecting the data.
Right.
We will be hearing from Dr. Latham and his team about what the interventions are, whether they're working,
correct,
whether they, and many of the things that you've identified are critical to, mm-hmm, to students' success. And so they're the themes that in the interventions we'll be looking for, and evidence of the success of those. And hopefully those things, or not hopefully, we know that those things can move forward the data right? This is just a reflection of the aggregate of it, mm-hmm. but what you're drilling down into is really the detail that we're going to hope to dive into here at this committee level. So thank you for spending the time with that. Dr. Latham, any comments?
So thank you. As I mentioned, Dr. Kingberry yesterday, and we met. Well, I appreciate her commentary and her feedback, because we're going to obviously join forces, as we have in the past, to strengthen that relationship with the Faculty Senate. And we're going to be at the next Faculty Senate meeting in May 11th to have that continued conversation around how we continue to partner. So that's first and foremost my commitment to the overall Faculty Senate relationship. Other things we talked about, as you mentioned before, are things that we've been working on, and I want to make sure the Faculty Senate may get updates around that, certainly around the training on EAB and degree works that's been ongoing for the last year or so, that we have to make sure that the faculty are aware and that we publicize that fully, because we have about 50 or 60 faculty members already go through the training and got good feedback. I know you went through it a year or so ago, and we'll make sure you stay updated as well in that process too. And also the fact that we've had great faculty participation on the retention committee, which was launched about 5 months ago. And Dr. Kingberry sits on that committee, as well as Dr. Broadnax here, who's with, good seeing you too, Dr. Broadnax, who sits on that committee as well. And we've had great faculty feedback from the retention committee, and I'm excited to see that continue to grow, be a participatory process for our faculty and our staff to work together around the goal of retention for our students overall. The next thing about joint training and so forth, we have a faculty-staff alliance we're working with Dr. Potter on now to talk about how we get training for faculty advisors and staff advisors and professional advisors within the first 2 years to come together on a monthly basis to help us discover and develop training profiles for them. And talk about program changes as well, as you mentioned earlier, about what's happening within the degree plans that may be affecting their particular progression and persistence, and what those changes are, so we can communicate that back out to the entire faculty community and to our staff, so we can make sure that we're all speaking the same language about the changes in the program, which, like you mentioned before, sometimes gets lost in translation between the department chair, the actual faculty member, making it down to the actual first year advising process. And so that faculty staff alliance is one part of the process we're working on right now, and we're going to get that launched, I'm sure, in the fall for that conversation also. And the other piece about disability accommodations, that's a big issue we talked about the part about already, that we have faculty who sometimes may not take that accommodation as strongly as they should have. And that's something that we have to make sure they understand the repercussions of that. And we actually have training scheduled for the fall around Professional Development Day for our faculty. That's going to be mandatory, I'm assuming, for Dr. Potter, for all faculty across the university to go through that process. And so I'll commit for the DRC team in my division to make sure they are part of that process, develop the training templates for that process, and I'm more robust on a quarterly basis to make sure that we are actually going to the colleges and committing to do training inside the colleges beyond just the PD days that happen to begin each semester. Mm-hmm. So we have had those conversations. I just want to give you some background and context around some of those issues, that they are on top of mind for us, and we are committed to making sure that we have a great partnership. So, but thank you for bringing us back to our conversation today. We appreciate it.
All right, I just have one more thing to say, that when accommodations are developed, right now we just have a template. Everybody gets extended time. Persons with disabilities are not the same. So they need different accommodations. So I hope you will look into that to make sure that they are individualized according to the needs of the student.
We certainly will. And from my understanding, we continue to make sure we can professionalize and make sure that opportunity for that office is fully functional and really following the letter of the law for all federally required disability accommodations for all our students. So we certainly will do that and continue to do so.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other? Yes.
I just have. So one, in terms of the disability issue, mm-hmm. what happens in the interim? I hear you say in the fall we're planning this training or whatever, but these students have needs that are now, not in the fall. So how do we accommodate whatever these issues are mm-hmm. that have been identified?
Oh, absolutely. So the issue that we talked about yesterday about the crowd of specific students, we're handling that right now. We're investigating that student, that particular faculty issue right now, currently, so we can address that before the end of the semester. So we, any case-by-case basis that is brought to our attention, we're immediately investigating that process and making sure it's being addressed.
So how do students know, or where do they get information about what their rights are and, you know, what avenues they have to, you know, have their questions or issues resolved?
how do they know where to go?
So a disability counselor is charged with that understanding of that particular dialogue with the student. That's a part of their role as a counselor within disability services,
okay,
is to provide them with information around the federal law, what that means, what their rights are within that particular construct, and then to be able to be a resource for them all the time. So it's a regular, ongoing relationship that they have with their disability counselor around that conversation. So it's not like you come in like a advisor for a class. You have an ongoing relationship with this particular DRC staff member to make sure that your accommodation is being met. If you have an issue, you know to come back to let us know that, so we can then follow up with the faculty member and make sure that accommodation is being met and provided to you in a way in which it should have been instructed by the paperwork that was provided.
Question. Does the public school system share with the university? Yeah, you know the answer to that. Okay.
No.
Does it share the specific accommodations?
No.
No.
They have to self-declare.
Excuse me. They have to self-declare, but the school that they live with, if they know they're going to college, there's an exit conference where they're given their rights and a document that they are supposed to share. They have a right to share that or not share it or pull it out when they need it. If they're doing well without it, many of them have to muscle through. But if there's a problem, that's when they pull it out.
Right.
And that's where the conflict with the teacher comes in, because here I've been working with you for 6 weeks, and all of a sudden now you're telling me I should have been doing this instead of doing that. But the student has that right. That's why when you said publish it to everybody, no, it's a private document.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the high school is supposed to provide a exit special ed conference for every child in special education leaving the public and schools of the District of Columbia. There is supposed to be a document and a process.
Thank you.
But it's their decision.
It's up to the student.
That's in the privacy laws. That's a right they have.
But the document is in their portfolio at the school, and I presume once they authorize the university to get it or they bring it in themselves. And I'm speaking from as the parent and as the principal of this process, making sure that they have the document, that they have it, and they know their rights, and they know what accommodations they're supposed to be provided by the District of Columbia as they go to college.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm a former supervisor of special education in D.C. Public Schools, so I concur with what you're saying. I think what Dr. Carter said is true. What is the grievance process for students who have issues with accommodations here? Do they go through the regular student grievance handbook, which is very vague about what the grievance process is? So I think we need to clarify that, because this student was running around, you know, he couldn't really figure out what was going on. So we need to be very clear, and when we give them their rights, say, if you have a disagreement, this is where you file, this is what you say. So that everybody, and it's for any student that has a grievance, because right now it's real hazy. The handbook is not too straightforward on grievance procedures.
Thank you. Trustee Felt.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank Dr. Kingberg for her comments. I guess I have a different kind of question, which is, if faculty members are in fact, is it that they don't believe that they're aware of the information that's out there, or do they simply, or do they just disagree with what the information says?
Well, this particular faculty member is a part-time faculty member. And I think sometimes the part-time faculty, they really don't have the orientation that full-time faculty have. I don't know, because I just know what the student presented. So,
because I think it would be
different
helpful
for different
to some of us to, you know, every time we meet, there's a list of things. But it seems to me,
there's a list of things about what? Huh? A list of things about what?
That haven't been done or should be done, or faculty isn't pleased with. I'm just trying to get at the information flow so that it'll be because something wasn't done, not because someone didn't know about it.
Well, I agree that that should happen. And I think that the more we have faculty on these committees, going back to the seat again, you can have a lot of these issues dealt with within the committee rather than us sitting out here and saying, oh, I think I know the answer to this, or I can't comment because, and I think that Dr. Weiner, because he's always allowed me to testify. Mm-hmm. But when you have a student sitting on the committee, a lot of those issues can be determined for you and spoken for you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Other questions from committee members?
I do have one other question.
Yes.
So my other question went to the concern that was raised about the three different systems that are in use, the DegreeWorks and
Banner and EAB.
Right. And I'm wondering, you know, why we don't have a way that those systems talk to one another so that we're not, I see you smiling, so I guess you've had these discussions.
No, no, this is a huge problem across higher education right now because we have so many of these systems designed to help with student success, mm-hmm. and there, a lot of these companies don't have an incentive, frankly, to create their systems in ways that link with one another. They're trying to stand alone, mm-hmm. and they sort of, anyway, long conversation to have another time. But your question, and I think that's really a question for mm-hmm. Dr. Latham, is about the what's being done to
right.
enable these systems to.
Right.
synchronize with one another. But this is not an uncommon challenge
right.
across higher ed.
I don't really care about
yeah.
whether it's common or not. What I care about is what do we do to resolve it.
Right. So let me jump in and answer Dr. Crider's question. So we've had that conversation the last few months. Once the Banner non-integration takes place and is fully loaded and fully integrated and ready, then we've already talked to Troy and Mike Rogers about a portal
okay.
that will connect those particular platforms together.
Okay.
Right. We just had, as you guys know, obviously infrastructure issues here for a long time. And
right.
so we couldn't start developing a portal until we had data migration, data cleanup, and then establish Banner 9 in a way that would be fluid and on the cloud so we could do those processes well before we talked about a portal. But that's next in line
okay.
with IT and with Mike and Troy in that conversation.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
The problem is, in fact, identifying. You obviously don't say that to them. So what do you say to them?
In terms of them,
These systems are
faculty and staff facing, by and large. Is that correct?
Students can access
the integration.
Is more related.
You were speaking about it from a faculty perspective.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought you also mentioned something about the students.
Right.
Yes, students access them also, but they can't. We have so many infrastructure problems. They can't get on the internet. They can't access their, for example, with after spring break, students were not able to get their midterm grades because it's a new system. Nobody trained them on how to do it. Faculty didn't know how to do it. You know, those of us that know technology, we can figure it out. But there's so many that don't.
Yeah.
So students were frustrated. One student told me that somebody else's grades were on her portal. So we have a lot to do.
Yes,
we have a lot.
And that was due to the Banner migration, right? It took place after spring break, and that's
mm-hmm.
a part of the Banner 9 upgrade. Yeah, and so
that
shut everything down to be able to make that migration, and so that was just one of the repercussions of that process.
Right.
But that process has to be done in order to get the full migration done to get to the cloud.
If there's a recognition that there's a problem,
right.
and again, there's a solution either in place or plan
mm-hmm.
to fix it, so that you don't have ongoing frustration from students and faculty and administrators about
Absolutely.
What's going on here, and that there's an answer that you can provide to the people who have faith in us to deliver a product that works. And so when I see, you know, we've got systems that aren't talking to each other and students that aren't getting what they want, as a board member, that concerns me.
Mm-hmm.
Because
Absolutely.
I think our obligation is to make sure that this kind of stuff really
mm-hmm.
doesn't happen
mm-hmm.
and it's resolved. So
mm-hmm.
That's the only reason I'm asking the question.
No, absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay.
Other questions? I was looking this way. Anything else? Okay. Very good. Thank you, Dr. Kingberry, for your testimony and the conversation. Really appreciate your time. I think any outstanding business, that comes to the end of our planned agenda, but anything else for the good of the order before we adjourn? We will take up the minutes from this. Jim? Yes. Is that Jim?
No, I didn't have anything.
Okay, thank you. We do not have a quorum, so we will take up the minutes from the prior meeting and from this meeting at our May meeting. Thank you all for coming and for really engaging in a rich conversation. Really helpful. Appreciate. And especially for the members of the committee who showed up, but also members of the board. Again, the goal is we're going to have 100% of the board being here by the time. This will be the committee to be at. With that, I will, well, we can't move to adjourn because we don't have a quorum. I will make an executive decision. We are adjourned.